Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Caring for People During COVID-19 conference call. I would like to introduce Michael Prince, Board Chair of Community Living BC. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Welcome, everyone, to this exceptional CLBC teleconference call. And as I just introduced Michael Prince, I'm the Board Chair of CLBC. I would like to welcome everyone for joining us today on this call. And thank everyone who has submitted questions to us over the last few days. We're going to try to get to as many as possible in the next hour or so. As was just mentioned by the TELUS operator, we are recording this teleconference call, and we will put the information up on the CLBC website so people can refer back to this, and you can go back and review the answers at your leisure. First, I'd like to just acknowledge that we are holding this, and we all are beginning this with gratitude that we are working on the land from which we are calling today our Indigenous traditional territories, wherever you are in the province. So thank you for that. Let me just explain a bit about our format today. We have with us on the teleconference call Minister Shane Simpson from the Ministry of Social Development and Poverty Reduction, Dr. Danielle Ben-Smith, who's the Deputy Provincial Health Officer for BC, and Ross Chilton, who's the Chief Executive Officer of Community Living BC. In a moment, I'll ask each of them to make an opening remarks of 3 to 5 minutes each, and then we will go to try to cover as many questions as possible that we've received from folks throughout the province. So I'd now just like to invite Minister Simpson to begin with some opening remarks.
Thank you, Michael, and welcome, everybody. It's good to be able to speak to you even in these very difficult times. I also want to acknowledge that we all are here in our different communities around the province in the traditional territories of the nations of those particular territories. This is an incredibly challenging time for everybody. It's been kind of evolving very aggressively over the last couple of weeks, though I'm sure that for many people it seems like it's been months and months. I want to thank all of you for continuing to do the work you do as self-advocates, as family members, and in support of your loved ones and people in the province who are facing the challenges that are addressed by CLBC. Our work as the ministry, as the government, is to keep people whole, to ensure that people have the essential services that they need, to ensure that people are protected as we move forward. You may know that earlier today, the public safety minister and the premier announced essential services for the province under the Emergency Management Act, and those will encompass many, if not most all, of the services that are delivered to people from CLBC, who receive support from CLBC. The work with CLBC will be looking at how adaptation of those services works to ensure that we're staying consistent with the directions from the provincial health officer and Dr. Ben-Smith, though we'll talk more about that moving on. We're also very focused at this point on ensuring the supply chain of goods, essential goods and services is coming in, including those that you require moving forward. In terms of the economic response, we announced the first phase of that, the $5 billion commitment that was announced by the finance minister and the premier a couple of days ago, and that includes $2.8 billion for people. We're still working. As you'll know, the federal government has moved and now introduced a series of initiatives and adjusted and adopted them or amended them some over the last few days. And we're working very closely with the federal government to look at how the resources that we provide to people to support people are compatible with what the federal government is doing and to ensure that between the two levels of government, people are getting what they need to be able to get through this extremely difficult and critical time. That work is ongoing, and it's a bit of a moving target. You'll be hearing more about that in the coming days for people, whether it's around lost earnings or simply around support around PWD moving forward. So I look forward to the chance to answer questions in that, but I think at this point I'll stop talking and let us move on to the next speakers and get to your questions.
Thank you very much, Minister Simpson. I'll now invite Dr. Danielle Ben-Smith from the Provincial Health Office to say some more opening remarks. Dr. Ben-Smith.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everybody. Yes, I've got myself off mute. That's great. And I'm just there trying to make sure that I've got the best audio possible for you. So good morning. I too just like to acknowledge the territory that I'm calling in from today is that of the Lekwungen peoples of the Songhees and Esquimalt Nations, and I'm very grateful to be here. In my opening remarks, I just wanted to touch on a couple of things. So one is just doing a really quick overview of COVID-19 and how that virus is spread, describe to you the population health goals that are coming from Dr. Henry and the population health team at the province, describe a little bit about the way each of us can help come together to achieve those goals, and then just one quick note about some of the ethical concerns that are coming up. So going back to point number one, the basics about the virus. So COVID-19 is caused by the SARS-CoV-2 virus, and it's transmitted or spread through droplets. So what that means is that if somebody has symptoms of coughing or sneezing, and they cough or sneeze, the virus can be spread in those little droplets, and wherever it lands, if somebody else comes and touches that surface and gets some of the virus on their hand and then touches their eyes, nose, or mouth, then the virus can get into their body and they can develop COVID-19. The other way that somebody can catch this virus is by being within 2 meters of somebody who is coughing or sneezing who has the virus. And again, that's because those droplets can travel up to 2 meters and then can get into somebody's eyes, ears, or eyes, nose, or mouth, and can get into their body that way. So this is not a virus that's in the air. It is only transmitted through droplets. Because of that, people are at highest risk of catching the virus if they're in close contact with somebody who has symptoms. And so what we've seen around the world is that is really, around household contacts. In terms of our population health goals from Dr. Henry's perspective and the population health team that's leading the COVID-19 response here in BC. And so really the two goals are twofold. The first goal is to protect those who are most vulnerable of severe COVID-19 disease or death related to COVID-19. And when we look out to the world literature and the countries that are ahead of us in the epidemic curve, we know that there is a significantly increased risk of severe disease in people over the age of 65. Over that age, we do see that the mortality rate, deaths related to COVID-19, really goes up. We also acknowledge that in the literature that people who have chronic health disease coupled with being older are at higher risk. So our goals from a population health perspective are to do everything we can as a provincial community to protect those who are most vulnerable. The second goal of the population health measures that have gone into place is to flatten the curve and preserve our healthcare system, to keep our healthcare system going, ensure that it doesn't get overwhelmed, and ensure that we have it properly staffed to care for people who will get ill. So those are two of our, primary goals. And the reason why we've implemented or directed the various population health measures, which you will have heard time and again now, repeated over and over in the media. And so those include physical distancing, meaning being as apart from others. The way that this virus is spread, as I described in the beginning, is by human beings being with human beings. So the more that we can keep our distance from others, the better. That said, and I know it gets a little confusing in the media, that does not refer specifically to our household contact. So within our household, we're going to continue to have, you know, similar interactions. However, the other really important population health measure that we've been messaging out is that if somebody develops symptoms, they should be to the, you know, the best of their ability or the situation circumstance that they're in, be at a distance of 2 meters from others. That is one of the things that's really going to help reduce the spread of this virus. As I mentioned earlier, the virus is spread through close contact with somebody who is sick. So that means somebody who's coughing or sneezing. If somebody's been exposed to the virus but they're not yet showing symptoms, it appears, again, from the science and the literature that their risk of transmitting or spreading the virus is actually quite low. So we're really focusing on people who have symptoms and that they do their best to stay stay apart from people. And generally, that we all do our part in terms of maintaining physical distance at this time. The other population health measures that we've that we're recommending is frequent hand washing, because as I mentioned, the way that this virus gets into our bodies is by touching or getting the virus on our hands and fingers and touching our face. So the third thing we want to do is not touch our face as much as possible. And finally, disinfection and cleaning. So this virus is easily killed by all sort of routine cleaning products or a 10% bleach solution. So we're encouraging, you know, that people are frequently disinfecting high contact surfaces such as light switches, faucets, and things like that. So we've covered a little bit about the basic of the virus and that it's spread through droplets, and because of that, it's spread through close contact with people. The population health goals, which are to protect those in our communities that are most vulnerable, which include people over the 65 and those with chronic health conditions. That we're also doing our best to protect our healthcare system and ensure that it can keep running and have enough supplies and staff to provide care when it's needed. And that the way that each of us can contribute to meeting those goals is by physical distancing, frequent hand hygiene, not touching our face, and if we develop symptoms, doing our best to self-isolate and be away from other people. I will mention that community transmission is happening. Testing is at its maximum capacity, and there is a very limited kind of strategic testing guidelines that are being followed. So it is not possible. We just do not have the tests. We don't have the lab capacity to test everybody. So there is a strategic testing guideline that's being followed. And because we're not going to catch or know about every single COVID-19 positive case, it's really important that we all do the population health measures that were mentioned previously, because we're not going to know specifically every person that has COVID-19. But what we do know is that it has now spread to every health authority in the province, and so there is community transmission happening. The last part of my remark is just around ethical concerns. As we've seen in other places in the world, this epidemic has the potential to overwhelm healthcare systems. It has the, and because it is a global pandemic, supplies are in short demand. Or supplies rather are in high demand and short supply of things like masks, gowns, gloves. And so this raises really challenging ethical questions about how do we allocate and distribute those types of supplies, and if we're looking further down the line, if our healthcare system does get overwhelmed, how do people make those challenging ethical decisions about who is prioritized for care? So I wanted to make it very clear and transparent to this group in particular that there is an ethical framework that's been developed based on previous pandemic influenza ethical frameworks that were developed a few years ago, and that there are about 8 or 9 ethicists that are involved with that piece of work, and that we're involved with specifically applying the ethical framework to the development of the personal protective equipment allocation framework, which has to do with that very challenging reality that we're facing right now, which is that there is a limited supply of things like surgical masks that are currently available. So I just wanted to be very, very clear that these decisions and how these things are going forward are being done with great thought, great care, and with the expertise of a number of different ethicists that are helping to guide the provincial response. I'll leave my comments there. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Ben-Smith. That was a very helpful opening set of remarks, covered a lot of key topics. I now would like to invite Ross Chilton, the CEO of CLBC, to make some brief opening remarks. Ross?
Yeah, thanks, Michael. And I don't know, I wasn't on, of course, like all of you, for part of the call. There is over 600 of you that have reached out today. The system by TELUS was designed to handle 1,000, so I'm not sure what happened there, but my apologies for the music you had to listen to, the quiet, and some of you calling back in. So I would like to say thank you to Minister Simpson and Dr. Ben-Smith and Deputy Minister David Galbraith for carving out some time for this important conversation today. Also to recognize groups like Family Support Institute, Inclusion BC, Vela, and Plan for all the steps they have taken to become an additional resource to self-advocates and families during this very difficult time. Like with all of you, the health and safety of the people we care about, the people with developmental disabilities, continues to be our top priority. The challenges that have been associated with COVID-19 have required our network of service providers across BC to make some pretty quick and significant changes to the way they are supporting individuals. We have directed those providers to quickly and responsibly adapt their services and redeploy their staff to support individuals in home or from home whenever that is possible. Obviously, with a virus like this, as you've heard with Dr. Ben-Smith talking about, it's a congregation of individuals, particularly individuals with disabilities that might find it difficult to understand or follow some of the personal distancing and health guidelines that she's just articulated. That does increase the risk of transmission of the virus to other individuals and to their support staff. That's why we've been working very closely with the Provincial Health Office over the last couple of weeks to get clear guidance for providers in terms of how they can support people, and earlier this week we directed that to be in groups of 5 or less. Smaller is better. That reduces the risk of transmission of the virus, so 5 is not a magical number, it's sort of a top end, but less is better. What we're hearing is that many providers have modified their supports, others are still working to finish and make necessary changes. We are trying to do that and have our network of providers do that in a way that does not overly disrupt the lives of the individuals needing the support, as well as the lives of their families and home share providers. I think a time like this really does show how important the support network is, and that's why it's been very difficult for individuals and families when that has been challenged. It hasn't been easy for the providers to make these challenges so quickly and thoughtfully, but they do need to consider a number of different needs, including the individual's needs, the family needs, and in some cases, the home share's needs. I have been quite inspired to hear how many families and home share providers have been able to take on more responsibility on a very short notice. What this enables the service providers to do is to redirect their attention to the individuals that need that support the most. Not everybody has family support. Not everybody has a network around them. But by those families and networks and home share providers taking on more it does free up the providers to put their attentions to others. We've also seen how many self-advocates have followed the direction to stay home where possible, and we've also heard how lonely that can feel. Many of them are reaching out to you folks and to us, kind of wondering when this is all going to end. And again, it's a hard thing, but at this time, health and safety has to be the priority. I also have to acknowledge that we've witnessed the vast majority of support workers in our sector that come to work every day to provide what is a critical service continue to come to work. These support workers understand that they are needed and they couldn't simply stay home, even when the Prime Minister was giving direction to people to stay home. They continue to come to work to take care of the people that we all care about. Over the next number of weeks, potentially months, I hope not, but potentially months, we're going to keep paying close attention to how the situation changes and look at how we'll adjust to those changes. And we'll be in regular communication with families, with self-advocates, with home share providers, and all the agencies that provide these critical services. So, Michael, I think I'll leave it there and be open to questions.
Thank you very much, Ross, and Minister, and Dr. Ben Smith. So we're now going to receive over the last, even just in the last day or so, dozens of questions from people throughout the province, and we acknowledge we've received more than we can actually get to in this call. And we CLBC has committed to responding to unanswered questions offline. We're also committing to holding a similar teleconference call like this in about 2 weeks' time, and if it's possible, we'll have the Minister and Dr. Ben Smith participating along with us again on that one. So let me begin. Our first question is directed to Dr. Smith. It's from a self-advocate, and the question is, what do I do if I feel sick and I can't get through to the 811 number?
Thank you very much, Michael. And I just, if I could just add two other points to my opening comments that I forgot to mention before I answer this question. One is, I don't think that I articulated that although the COVID-19 can be a severe illness for a smaller group of people, the majority of folks who are, you know, in good health and are under the age of 65, if they get COVID-19, will have a fairly mild course of the illness. So about 80% of people, when we look out at the rest of the world, actually have a very mild illness similar to a common cold, and recover fully on their own. So I forgot to mention that. The other piece I also just wanted to acknowledge is that wanted to acknowledge Ross Chilton's leadership. He's been such a wonderful advocate and has been in close contact with our office, seeking guidance and trying to troubleshoot and implement these high-level population health principles, understanding that there's very unique situations and that everything needs a bit of a tailored response. So I just really wanted to acknowledge Ross. So in relation to this question, what to do if I feel sick and can't get through to the 811 number? So the first thing is, if you're feeling sick, as much as possible, self-isolate and maintain that physical distance from others if it's possible. If you're feeling very sick, so you're very, very unwell with severe shortness of breath, chest pain, change in your color, you're pale or getting blue, then call 911. So if you need immediate medical assistance, you should call 911. Some people can get sick with, can get quite severe illness, and you should never be deterred or you should never not call 911. That said, I know there's been a lot of sort of mixed messaging, because at the same time, we are asking people, if they've got mild symptoms, to not go to the hospital. The reason for that is that we don't want to spread the virus in hospital settings. So if it's mild symptoms, please stay home. If it's mild symptoms and you can't get through to the 811 number, there are two other options. So one is the self-assessment website, which is at bc.thrive.health, And that is an online tool that can help you determine whether you need further assessment for COVID-19. The province also has just launched, after this weekend, a support app and self-assessment tool that you can find in the Apple App Store or on Google Play. And it is BC COVID-19 support. In addition to a web or an app-based self-assessment tool, there's a lot of other resources on that app, including tips on physical distancing, going over, effective hand hygiene, and a variety of different supports and resources. It also includes data. So if you're interested in tracking the situation in BC on a day-to-day basis, it covers, how many cases there are, et cetera. So those would be my responses to that question. If you're feeling sick, please stay home. If you're severely ill, please call 911. If you've got mild symptoms, please try and access one of those other resources. Thanks.
Great. Okay. Thank you. Our next question comes from families, and it's for Ross as well as you, Dr. Smith, but maybe Ross can begin. The question is, what is being done to reduce the risk of infection for people who live in staffed residential homes? So, Ross?
Yeah, very important question. Thanks, Michael. And I guess what I would do is I'd expand that beyond staffed residential homes to all homes. I don't know about you, but while I haven't been spending much time at home lately, I've found when I've gotten home, it's been cleaner than it usually is. Because it's important that kind of all physical surfaces are clean, especially high touch surfaces. So that's sort of the direction that we've been giving out to home share providers, families, and operators, is that those high touch environments, cleaning and disinfecting regularly, especially any equipment that could be shared between individuals, very important that that gets cleaned. The other stuff, I mean, we've talked about a lot, and it's been certainly out in the media a lot around the physical distancing, hand hygiene. I might get Dr. Ben Smith to weigh in a bit on respiratory hygiene. But we do understand that some of these directions can be more difficult to have consistently applied with individuals that might struggle to understand the directions, or certainly to continually and consistently apply those directions. So we are very close. The Provincial Health Office has developed some particular guidance that is going to go out to our sector around how to control the spread of COVID-19 in residential environments. And Dr. Ben Smith, I think that's close to going out. Is that right?
Yes, it is. Sorry, I should have fixed my mute earlier. Yes. It's getting much closer, and thank you for raising that. I think absolutely the things that you've touched on already, all of the things that have already been mentioned, are the things that help to reduce the spread of the virus. And so I know that there's a lot of questions and concern about, other supplies that might be helpful. And we see images, of course, on the media of other places where everybody's wearing masks all the time. And so maybe if I can just speak very briefly on that particular issue. So surgical masks can be helpful. Procedural masks or any kind of like physical barrier can be helpful in capturing and reducing how far droplets might travel if somebody who's sick coughs or sneezes. So that is one of the ways that we can reduce the spread of the virus, is for sick people to be wearing masks. People who are not sick and not having symptoms, actually wearing a mask in the studies doesn't seem to offer as much protection as we might think. And part of the reason for that is that people can self-contaminate because they might actually be touching the mask or their face a little bit more to readjust the mask. And also when they're putting the mask on and taking it off, that's a potential time of contamination. So I just want to make that clarification, that masks can be helpful for people who are sick. Now, that said, masks are in very short supply. The province has coordinated a personal protective equipment procurement group, which means they're consolidating and bringing everything into one group to do their best to get masks flowing into BC. Because one of our, those two overarching goals are to protect the most vulnerable and then also protect the healthcare system, those are the goals that are guiding where those masks are going to go when they arrive. And so I just, again, want to be very, very clear to this group in particular that I have raised people, the issue of communities outside of the healthcare setting as a really important group that we need to be considering from an ethical standpoint in relation to those two goals when we're thinking about things like masks. So I just wanted to add that to the conversation.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
And Dr. Ben Smith, when your guidance is finalized, we will be publishing that on our website for anybody to access. And so if family wishes to look for that, it certainly will be on our website, hopefully this week.
Yes, thank you, Ross. And I'll also just let people know that there is a lot of, like, extremely busy work happening trying to understand if masks aren't available, what's the next best option, and so forth down the line, so that hopefully that document will offer some very practical tips and thoughts around how people can help reduce the spread of the virus.
Good. Thank you both on that question. Next question is for Minister Simpson, and it comes from a self-advocate who asked us, will the minister increase disability PWD benefits during this crisis? Minister Simpson.
Thanks, Michael. So as you know, everybody, people receiving PWD are not all in the same place in terms of receiving it. Those that have earning exemptions and supplement their PWD with earnings. What we're doing right now is we're working very closely with the federal government around looking at what their federal supports are. The $2.8 billion of family and individual supports that were announced by the finance minister include supports to ensure that people are kept as whole as possible. So we're very much in a conversation about making sure people have the resources and the funds that they need to meet their needs, whether it's needs around housing, around food, around health concerns, and just around general support. So that work is ongoing and around how to make sure that people have those resources, including additional resources to be able to meet their needs. We're doing that in conjunction with the federal government, who have put significant money on the table, trying to understand better where that those federal dollars are going to go so that we can make sure that we're putting money in to complement that, because there are areas where the feds won't be necessarily putting money, and we'll be looking at how we can support that. So yes, it is an issue. Yes, it is being worked on, and yes, we will have more to say about that in the coming days.
Okay, thank you, Minister. Next question for Ross and Dr. Smith, Ben Smith again. Question from families: why has CLBC directed service providers to deploy staff to family homes if someone is staying at home during the emergency? Doesn't that increase the risk of getting COVID-19 for the individual, their family, and service provider staff? I think this is a pretty common question we've been hearing, Ross, over the last week or two.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, in part, it stems from the fact that all of these providers that have day services where numbers of people congregate have been working so quickly to try to decongregate and to return people to home, because we know if they can be supported safely from home, that's the best place for them to be. And so what I think our providers are doing is where an individual is at home and can be at home and doesn't require in-person support, that's the best option, is not to have the staff come into the person's home, come into contact with the individual in cases of risk of transmission. However, I know that those providers are also making sure that their staff keep in touch with the individuals by phone, email, or text, or FaceTime, Skype, those kinds of things, just to prevent sort of the isolation and the loneliness that can occur for all of us when we're used to having a lot of social contact and suddenly that's reduced. But we have asked the providers to support people from the person's home where they require that, and because we know that's going to be the safest place.
Yes, thanks, Ross. It's Danielle, and I would just echo that the goals around reducing the spread of the virus is to minimize, the contact that people are having. And so in that scenario, provided the staff is coming in and, immediately upon coming in are performing hand hygiene, so we know that they're not spreading the virus around the home or to that particular client, and provided they don't have symptoms, so they're not spreading the virus through coughing or sneezing, that in those contexts, then the chance of spreading the virus would actually be quite low, provided that the hand hygiene is happening and that they're not coughing or sneezing.
Okay. Thank you. Next question to the minister again, and possibly with his deputy there to help our details. This is a self-advocate question, Minister. It says, I work and I receive PWD at the same time. I've now lost my job, and I'm going to be applying for employment insurance, EI, the federal EI program. Will I still get my full amount of PWD when I receive EI benefits?
Thanks for that, and that's an important question for about 20,000 people across the province who work, many with disabilities, the majority of them persons with disabilities who have earned income on top of their PWD benefits. We recognize that that earned income is an important part of people's livelihood, an important part of how they pay the bills, and we do want to make sure that people are kept as whole as possible. The federal government has introduced kind of the accelerated EI program for people. Plus, we now know that there is the new benefit that was just announced yesterday or so from the federal government. To be clear, we're trying to understand better the difference between those and which ones apply. We're looking at how do we create opportunities here to not have people end up with less than they would get moving forward. So it's very much an issue, and we're not we're looking to make sure that people get to access the federal resources that they qualify for, and to ensure that they have the necessary provincial benefits they need. I don't know whether David Galbraith, my deputy minister, is on the phone, and he's one of the co-chairs of the Vulnerable Population Committee and a working group in government, and I know they're doing some specific work. I don't know, David, whether you wanted to add something to that.
Thank you, Minister. I would just add that we are literally working with our finance colleagues right now on this very issue. It was a surprise to folks about the feds making the shift the way they did on the EI benefits. So we're just working through what that means for our clients, and we'll hopefully get this sorted out really quick.
Okay.
Yeah, just to add to that, we know that there's the time pressures are here. Checks went out yesterday and people got checks, but we know that they need to have certainty about this in the coming days, and working with Minister James and the finance folks on how this all plays out, I'm very hopeful that we'll be able to get some specific answers out to people in the coming days. That would be my hope, so people know what to expect. But we're looking to make sure that people are kept as whole as possible and they have the money they need. So we're looking at all of that.
Okay. Thank you, Minister. Next question is to you, Ross. Comes from families. Can family members with IF payments, and that's, I guess, individual funding payments, pay themselves to provide supports when support workers have resigned or new ones cannot be found because of the COVID-19 crisis? So you spoke earlier, Ross, about a lot of changes going on, challenges around availability of staff and whatnot. So this is from family members saying, could we pay ourselves, provide supports when our support workers are not there?
Yeah, great question, Michael. And, I mean, I think one of the things that we probably don't acknowledge enough all of the time, but we certainly need to acknowledge during times like this and would be known to the families on the call, is that families always continue to provide a significant amount of support to their family member. And really, the role often of these individualized funding payments is to enable families to hire people to support them so that the kind of the work isn't all on the family. So while it's always our preference that those monies are used to hire people so that the family can continue to be well itself and to have the chance for a little bit of a break or respite, we do understand that during times like this, that might get difficult. What I would say is that I did talk to Angela Clancy, I think, late last week. The days all seemed to run into each other, so I'm not sure. I think it was late last week, about Support Worker Central, the website that helps to match support workers with families. And I asked her, was that ready for a big uptick in demand? And she reassured me that it is. So our preference would be that families do seek to find a replacement worker to work with their family member if that's possible and if that is what is in the best interest of their family member. Having said that, these are extraordinary times. And if a family cannot replace that support worker, we will accept that they will take some of those funds to pay themselves for the additional supports that they're taking on during this time, at least for the next few months while we wait till things kind of settle down.
Right. Okay. Thank you, Ross. Next question is a self-advocate question, and we, I think, directed to Dr. Smith and probably you as well, Ross. The question is, who can help me if I get sick and I need more support at home? Who can help me if my staff member gets sick and can't come to my house? So it's kind of a building on what was just spoken about. But perhaps, Dr. Smith, you could address some of the protocols about people that get sick and need help. Roski,
sure. Yes, thank you. So a lot of the points are going to be the same. So certainly if you're feeling sick with mild illness symptoms, the best thing to do is to try and stay away from others as much as possible. If you are having severe symptoms, having symptoms that you're concerned about, is to try and dial that 811 and they can provide a bit more guidance. If you can't get through to that number and you're having very severe symptoms and you're very short of breath, having chest pain or problems with changing color, that sort of thing, then please dial 911 and get immediate help. I can say that, again, from a provincial level, there is a whole team that's working on human health and human resource issues down the cascade and working to redeploy and come up with staffing considerations all through the various sectors. And so and also encouraging social organizations to develop contingency plans to the best of their abilities. So I can't speak because I'm not involved directly with that work, but I know that it's happening and that thinking about the staffing needs outside of direct healthcare settings is something that's being considered. So I'll leave it at that and let Ross speak maybe more specifically to protocols for CLBC supports.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, what Dr. Ben Smith and I have been talking about consistently, and I hope aligns with your expectations as families and as self-advocates, is that we want individuals to have the access to the same health care supports that all citizens get. So the best place to be when you are mild or moderately sick is at home with healthy people around you to help you get better. That's obviously going to be a better place to be than to be in hospital. And so agencies, I know, are working very hard to make sure that they can respond to that shifting needs, that someone can be well 1 minute and not the next. But we don't want people who are just mildly ill to be going into hospital, because that increases the risk that they could contract something else. So So the agencies are live to that. We just think that it's best if people are in that kind of mild and moderate state, that they have loved ones and support people around them to get better at home.
Thank you both. Minister Simpson, you in your opening remarks, you made brief reference to a press conference this morning with the Premier, and I think this next question really speaks to this, and you maybe could add a bit if you'd like. It's, will service provider staff be deemed essential services?
Thanks, Michael. And today, the Premier and the Public Safety Minister announced under the Emergency Measures Act an expansion of the essential service groups, and it does include the groups and individuals who provide essential social and community services, as in many of the people in the organizations that provide support for people with who are involved with Community Living BC. So those are essential services. They will move forward as essential services as is necessary. As I said before, we as government will be ensuring that we're continuing to provide the resources that those organizations need to be able to fulfill their responsibilities. And there's significant discussion, and I know Ross is working on this, and CLBC and others, with the direction of the Provincial Health Office, to make sure as we look at how we adapt the delivery of services to provide enhanced protections against the challenge of COVID-19, that work is going on. So yes, we expect that those services will continue to be delivered. They may require some adaptation through consultation to make sure that we're keeping people as healthy as we can and not increasing risk for others, but the services that folks receive are there to be delivered.
Thank you, Minister. Ross, would you like to just add to that? Or?
Yeah, just one thing I'd like to, I mean, I think that would be a tremendous relief to individuals, families, and providers, is just that confirmation that their work is essential and that we need them, especially during challenging times like this. And I'd just like to take this chance to indicate, too, that all 37 CLBC offices across the province are still open with a skeleton crew at the office so that people that need to access our offices can do so. Sometimes for safety reasons, we have a sign on the door that indicates while the office is open, the door is locked, so call us and we can come to the front door and open it. Because we have also tried to have most of our workers work from home, again, aligning with the Public Health Office directions that where people can work from home, that's better. But be reassured that at this time, all 37 offices are open and our staff are there for you as they would in any other time.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. You get to catch your breath for a minute, Ross, but be ready for the next question, which is both for you and perhaps Dr. Smith could kick off on this one. Some people need to get out of the house as part of their behavior support plan. So here's a good family question. If there is a lockdown, as some people are calling it, can individuals still be taken out for a drive? Will we need special permission? Dr. Ben Smith.
Yes, thank you. And I'm happy to take this question. So first off, I'll say that actually from a population health perspective, lockdowns are not the recommended course of action. So what is recommended is physical distancing, so trying to keep as much distance from, you know, from others as possible outside of our families and our household contacts. But actually being indoors can sometimes promote the spread of the virus. There's more contaminated surfaces possibly inside. So definitely being outside is a good thing. It's good for our health and our mental health. But as Dr. Henry has said, physical exercise, not socialize. So this is not a time to go outside. And as we saw images of like big groups of people within 2 meters all clustered on a beach together, that's not the type of scenario that's safe or helpful in terms of flattening out the curve right now. But definitely being outside with members of your household or being outside and maintaining that physical distance is a really important piece of maintaining our physical and mental health over the days to come. So I will just reassure people that there will not be a full-on, as described, lockdown, because it just does not, it's not a public health measure that is effective. And so no permission will be required. What we're asking people to do is just, to the amount that it's possible, keep that physical distance and do the hand hygiene and the coughing etiquette. So if they cough, into the elbow, but ideally if they're coughing, just staying away from other people.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah, we've heard a lot of that slogan lockdown in the media, both Canada and the United States, and thank you for your clarifications on that. Ross, any additional comments?
Just a couple of subtleties, because, of course, with some individuals, it's pretty difficult to go for a walk with them and have them follow sort of physical safety guidelines. So in those situations, I think walking in places where there aren't likely to come across other people, walking at times of day where it's quieter. I know I'm personally going out for walks at 9:30 at night. It's not tonight if it rains, but to try to get out when it's, you're not around other people. And the same thing in terms of vehicle use is sort of sitting within the vehicles in ways that you can maintain that 2 meters of distance.
Okay, thank you. Next question is to the minister and perhaps your deputy. Comes from a self-advocate. Question is, can I apply to the government, provincial government, I assume, for extra money to shop for things I need during COVID? Will there be extra funding to help pay for rent? Again, a big question that's been asked by a lot of British Columbians, minister. And again, there's been some news in the last few days. Perhaps you could just speak to that.
Sure. You'll know that we announced a number of rent initiatives, including banning evictions around this. So we've provided those protections, but we also know that people need to pay their rent. So we're still refining, and as Minister Robinson, the housing minister, talked about the other day, the detail is being refined right now as to what that looks like. We announced the plan, but there's, as with many things government's doing right now, because things are moving so quickly, we're wanting to get the top line information out. Details are to be sorted out. But having said that, and we'll kind of look at how that specifically affects different groups of people, including folks on PWD. But the other thing to know is that we have a wide range of crisis supplements available through the ministry, including supplements to support people around things like rent, or other requirements and needs. Those are there. We're streamlining the processes to ensure that people can access those more quickly with less bureaucracy than might normally be there. So, yes, there are supplements and things available for folks if they need them to be able to make sure that they can pay the bills. David, I don't know if you want to add something to that.
Sure, if I can, Minister. Just a couple of things. One, I'd just like people to know that we are focusing all of our staffing on our front line. We want to ensure that our offices are open, which they are, and also we have people on the phones on our contact centers. And also we are at this time, since extraordinary time, is we're doing everything we can to not require people to come in to get their checks, for example. So we have lifted a whole bunch of normal reporting requirements just to ensure that people are getting the money that they need. I checked the phone line stats for yesterday and discovered that we had an average response time of 4 minutes. It just shows the dedication of the people that are working on the front lines and that focus on ensuring that we serve people right away. So the offices are there, the phone lines are there. If you're feeling like you're in crisis, as the minister said, we have crisis supplements to help you, and we have the people that can provide those services for you. So that's what our focus is on right now.
Okay. And those phone numbers and contact information, David, would be on your websites? And
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. And we'll maybe cross-link that, Ross, for the CLBC information as well, just to let our clients know. Okay. On to the next question. Which is for you, Ross. Will families lose individualized funding if they cannot find support workers during this emergency. I think you've kind of touched on this already, but it says, will CLBC allow families to roll IF funds over until next year? So it's a variation of a question you've already spoken a bit to, but if there's anything else you'd like to add on that?
So quick one, no, they won't lose the money. Yes, they can roll it over to next year. We just ask that they let their CLBC contact person know.
Great. Okay, great. That's good to know. Next one for you, Dr. Ben Smith, from Families. When is it safe for a caregiver who has symptoms to go back to caring for someone?
Thank you so much. So that's a great question. And the thinking and guidance on this has actually shifted as we get new evidence and science about how this virus is spread and how long people are contagious for. So based on the most recent and available evidence, what the population health operations group, the guidance that we're giving is that when somebody develops symptoms, so when those symptoms first start, that's the beginning of their period of contagiousness. So once they get the symptoms is when they themselves are able to spread the virus to others. That period of contagiousness seems to last up to 10 days. So the guidance now is that people who are sick and having symptoms should stay home or stay away from others as much as possible until they are feeling better until they are feeling better and at least 10 days have passed. So if somebody gets to that 10-day mark and they're still, for example, having fevers or just not feeling well, then they should continue self-isolation until they feel better. If somebody gets to that 10-day mark, so they've had the symptoms started 10 days previously, if they get to that 10-day mark and they're feeling back to themselves, they're feeling healthy, then they are considered outside of their contagious period. We do not believe that they can spread the virus anymore. The one thing I'll mention is that in some people, 10 days will pass. They feel better, but they continue to have a mild cough. We believe that those people are no longer able to spread the virus. So some people will feel better, have passed 10 days, and have a mild cough. They can go back to, they can be out of self-isolation. They can resume caregiving. And the belief is that they will not be spreading the virus.
Okay. Thank
you. So, Michael, it's Ross here. I do have to interrupt now because our window for this call ends at 12:30. So I think we're about to be
officially cut off
this time.
Cut off. Okay.
So just if I could just say thanks to everybody who took the time today to join this call, and all those, Dr. Ben Smith, Minister Simpson, David Galbraith. I think it's been very helpful to share this information, and we will communicate out around a potential call in a couple of weeks to answer some more questions and to connect around the changing circumstances.
Right. Well, thank you, Ross. And, again, apologies, everyone, for the technical glitch earlier beyond our control. Again, I know you're all very busy and you're meeting, so I appreciate this was important. As everyone has said, we live in extraordinary times right now, very fluid, ever-changing. And appreciate that people are working long, hard hours, whether that's family, self-advocates, home share providers, other caregivers, other people are on the call. Whatever your role is, thank you for your interest and support. We will endeavor to provide answers to people offline, and we will work on having another second teleconference call on this very important topic area in a couple of weeks. So thank you all for participating, and thank you to everyone who's shared questions with us and shared their concerns. We're in this together. We're going to get through this together. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes the Caring for People During COVID-19 conference call. Thank you for your participation and have a nice day.